Okay, good evening. My name is Claire Gladewright, Acting Mayor of Kingborough. It is my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's council meeting on Monday the 17th of February 2025, and welcome to those in the public gallery and everyone who is watching along via YouTube at home. It is 5:30 p.m. and I now officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. Council meetings are live streamed on YouTube, and in accordance with council's policy, I will ask the CEO to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Yes.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Attendees this evening, we have myself, Acting Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson, and I'm aware that Councillor Street will be a few minutes late. From our staff this evening, we have our Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Dave Stewart, our Director of People and Finance, Mr. David Spinks, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Daniel Smee, Director of the Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms. Delise Shakuti, Manager of Development Services, Ms. Tasha Tyler Moore, our Senior Planner, Ms. Mary McNeil, Communications Lead, Ms. Sam Adams, our Executive Assistant, Mrs. Amanda Morton, and I did skip one person, Director of Engineering Services, Mr. David Reeve, who will be attending his very last council meeting this evening with Kingborough Council. So, Mr. Reeve, on behalf of the councillors, I would like to wish you all the very best on your upcoming adventure. We are very saddened about your imminent departure. And I would like to say that we have thoroughly enjoyed your attendance at council meetings and your humour. And once again, thank you very much. Moving on, our apologies this evening. We have an apology from our Mayor, Councillor Reet. We're on page one, confirmation of minutes. So I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please, that the minutes of the open session of council meeting number two, held on the 3rd of February 2025, be confirmed as a true record. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. Workshops held since the last council meeting. On the 11th of February, we had a workshop on local government reforms and Kingston Park. Page two now, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? No. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? If you could please just state your name and your suburb for the record.
Mark Donnellan from Huntingfield. I'm interested in getting a coffee van on site at Kingston Park. Since the coffee hole closed, I've previously asked a question about this in November on the 24th, and have had some correspondence from a council officer. So I have a couple of questions. I've identified one site that's available on Sparrowhawk Street. Are there any other sites available to vendors around Kingston Park?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor, at this stage, no. We did have to work with our roads engineer to find a suitable location, which due to the traffic and the car parking in and around that area was a little bit limited. But I'd also like to, I suppose, emphasise that we're looking at opportunities for the coffee hole space as a priority, so there's a more permanent solution to food and coffee at the park.
Thank you. One other question. Do the permits issued to vendors normally limit usage of a single site to 3 days a week?
Ms. Shikuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Sorry, could you repeat that?
Sorry, that was a bit fast.
If you could come nice and close to the microphone so that you're a little louder too, please.
Yep. Do the permits issued to vendors normally limit usage of a single site to 3 days a week?
Mr. Drew, Acting Mayor. That's a good question. I'm not sure, and I have to take it on notice.
Sure. Last question was, am I likely to encounter any permit limitations preventing a vendor from using the site every Saturday morning?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, we do have a food truck policy, and that's sort of outlined in that policy exactly what you can and can't do. So it's quite detailed. It'll talk about various different locations which might have some trading day considerations. So some of those ones may be limited, mainly because they'd be popular and making sure that your people have other people can actually use them as well at the same time. So all those things, when we're putting a new location in place, which is I think what you're talking about here, you'd take that into consideration at the same time. But I'd certainly refer you to that food truck policy that sits on our internet, and there's a lot of details there.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the gallery this evening? No. Okay, questions on notice from the public. Just a reminder, if you wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We had one question on notice from Ms. Jo Landon regarding local provision schedule, and an officer's response was provided from Mr. Adrian Stander. Page 3 now, questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? None this evening. Questions on notice from councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from councillors. So the open session now adjourns, and the planning authority commences at 5:40 p.m. We're on page 4, officers' reports to the planning authority. We're considering DA-2024-249, a development application for dwelling and ancillary dwelling at 21 Norwood Avenue in Taroona. There is a recommendation on page 21, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Bain. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My paperwork's going everywhere. I'm happy to move this development application for the dwelling and ancillary dwelling at 21 Norwood Avenue, Taroona. The report is thorough in regards to the intentions, the layout, the design, and also the summary of representations and the comments to that. I also would like to note that I guess empathise with the residences next door, where there is a change to their amenity, and I empathise that change, that amenity is always difficult. You're looking out to a window, and that window view is changing. But I guess Taroona is an older suburb. People who, you know, are looking for something different, updating, modernising. A family home. These things do change. I did look at the sunlight and the sunlight into the habitable spaces, and I just had a question relating. I think it was 2.5.2. A comment from representatives about the habitable windows facing south. I just wondered, the officer response on that one was related to privacy, and I just wondered if it was more that the representation was more concerned about the sunlight or the fact that these habitable windows were facing south. I just didn't quite understand that comment there.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, that specifically going to the plan, the comments you've said is about windows that are facing south that they're concerned about. If they're facing south, then that can be overshadowed by the proposal. because they're already on the south side of the building, so they'd be affected if they were north-facing windows, but not right. south-facing windows.
Of course it does. Thank yep. you. I'm saying that and going, I understand that. Right. Okay. And just wondering as well, do we know if the auxiliary dwelling would be used for Airbnb purposes?
Ms. Tyler.
I understand that might not be part of the planning scheme, what we're looking at tonight, but I do, again, empathise perhaps that this would be a very much a change for the surrounding neighbours as well.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor. The application is for an ancillary dwelling, and there's a set of rules about what an ancillary dwelling must comply with. It would require different consideration if it was to be visitor accommodation, but in saying that, once it's approved, it doesn't mean that they couldn't apply to make a visitor accommodation, but that may be a permitted application through the state government changes to the planning scheme, or it may be a discretionary application depending on what codes affect the site. But at this time, the decision for tonight is as an ancillary dwelling, so we can't predict what they may do with that in the future.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. And as raised by one of the representations, can you please explain how the significant tree register works in this instance of the noted tree?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
There was concern of the removal, but noting that it is a significant tree.
Through you, Acting Mayor, my recollection, it wasn't a significant tree on our register.
Sorry, it's not a significant tree. It's in the significant tree register, I thought. Oh, it's not.
It's not in the significant tree register.
Yep, I'm wrong too then. Okay, just checking that one. All right, so there's nothing at all in relation to that, the concern from the resident about the value of that tree to the treescape.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, we do have a significant tree register that sits in the planning scheme, and the register has a whole lot of trees listed in it, which the councillors would be familiar with, that we had an update a couple of years ago now for that. So people can nominate trees to be on that significant tree register, and they need to meet particular qualifications for that, like cultural significance, botanical significance, and there's four other criteria that goes with that. So trees can be nominated and listed, and if they are listed, then they are afforded further protection through the planning scheme. In this instance, that hasn't been listed, so the tree is just considered like any other vegetation that we deal with. And it, from memory, was going to be impacted as a result. The American ash tree towards the front is not a native tree, but non-native trees can be on the significant tree register if people nominate and it goes through. But as it's not nominated today, we can't consider it as a significant tree.
Are there any further comments or questions? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you very much, Acting Mayor. And look, from my point of view, it's a relatively straightforward development application. I do have a question again about the American ash tree. While it's not a significant tree in terms of the register, it is a significant tree to the community. But I understand, and please correct me, it probably wouldn't trigger a biodiversity payment for its removal. Is that right? Because it's an introduced species?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the offset requirements only relates to native vegetation.
Yep, great. Thank you for the clarification. So when a tree is significant to the community but not significant to our register, how do we normally try and harmonise that, or we don't?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, what would occur is if we get the representations and we think that there's significance to the tree, we may approach the developer and express that the community particularly likes that tree or wants the tree to stay, and then they have the opportunity to consider whether they do that. As it's not afforded any protection under the planning scheme, because the planning scheme is limited to native species unless it's a significant tree as determined, as I've said, under the code, then there's no obligation for us to do that. But certainly when people raise it, we do share those concerns with the representatives quite often and see if they can try and accommodate it.
And in this situation, was that representation made, and what was the response from the developer?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the Acting Mayor, the representative was... the applicant was provided outline of what the representations were, and I wasn't part of those actual conversations, but I presume it was that they weren't going to change it.
Okay. And is it your view that if the tree was retained, it would actually significantly impact the development?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I'd need to look at the plans in detail, which I'm happy to do, to see if it would be impacted or not. But if you were of a mind in the chamber today to put a condition on that the tree had to be protected, you would have very little hope in the tribunal because it's not afforded any protection.
All right. Thank you. That answers my questions. That's great.
Further questions or contributions? Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Acting Mayor. Look, just don't want to reiterate the comments that Councillor Antolli and Councillor Majority made about the tree. It is a bit of a tricky one. Like, the representations have highlighted a few things that I guess a bit peculiar, and one of the issues or peculiarities in this application being Taroona is that there are very few vacant lots, if any, still left. So change like this, I understand, is somewhat challenging to neighbours, given that they've been used to virtually a vacant block for a very long time, and that tree has been allowed to grow and is obviously a huge feature of the road. I guess my question in relation to this is just around the existing, the shared driveway, and how that would kind of, at the moment, these two blocks, the neighbouring to the south, is the same owner. But what would happen for future if this, say, these properties are sold on? How does that work in terms of the shared carriageway?
Ms. Tyler.
Through you, Mayor, Acting Mayor, I'm just having a look at the plan. So it has a right of carriageway easement on there, so it must be registered on the title. So you must, any easement registered on title has to be complied with going forward. We have lots of them throughout the municipality, whether they go over portions of the site like this one or whether they go across a whole site, so it needs to be respected and maintained unless it's otherwise applied for to be removed.
Councillor Dean.
Yeah, I think the key issues here have been raised by other councillors, and I also support and appreciate the report that's been put together, and I will support the recommendation.
Further comments or questions? No. If there are none, then I will put the motion as printed on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye. And against? Motion is carried. Sorry, Councillor Midgley, I didn't give you the opportunity to sum up, but I will remember on the next item. Motion is carried. So moving on now to the next item on page 48, we're considering DA-2024-171, a development application for Stage 2 of the North West Bay River Multi-User Trail and Associated Works. There is a recommendation on page 82, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. It was moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yes, I did put my light on to move this one. This multi-use trail is significant and a fantastic opportunity for our Tracks and Trails network. For me, it's really a no-brainer, but in that, I note that the staff have done a lot of work considering the impact on the threatened species habitat, the environment, the natural values, the track construction, the threatened species and the surrounding neighbours. There's been a lot of detail in regards to that. It's been designed and located to have the least environmental impact in accordance with the expert advice. And so just so that the community knows, the proposal is for the multi-use trail, as I noted, and it is for a multi-use recreation trail for the use of community and visitors to the municipality, which forms Stage 2 of the Council's Northwest Bay River multi-user trail project. I don't know if people have been on the trail on the other end of Sandfly Row, but it is really fantastic. It's beautiful. It's such a great asset. I looking at the report, I can see that council staff have done they would have had to do a lot of work in regards to working with private landowners and the other stakeholders involved. It would have been a lot of work just to discuss all that, get all the approvals, work out the routes and that sort of thing. I also note the different consultations with different user groups as well. And I look forward to hearing what my other council colleagues have in regards to say to this. My only comment on this is that I have actually seen people walking their dogs off lead on the track, And so I guess something to think about for this really important area, environmental area, is that perhaps we relook at maybe our signage and place that perhaps in the car parks, because people, much to my teenagers' embarrassments, I did let them know about the dogs, and they said they didn't see the signs. So, yeah, maybe that's just something to consider around actually where we place the signs and might need to place more and things like that around. But, yeah, just really fantastic. Thanks so much to everybody who's been involved. Look forward to hearing from my council colleagues.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor, Acting Mayor. I'm really excited about this project. It's been a baby for Sue Sprott, I know, and she's been working on this for as long as she's been working on council. And I just wanted to point out that it's one of these visions that have come to fruition in 1996. I was on the forming committee for the Northwest Bay River Management Committee, steering committee. So it's 29 years that this project has been worked on by various members of staff and community members, community groups. Reports have been written. It's been an amazing journey, and this is really the culmination of all that. I've walked the entire length of the river from the Longley Bridge near the hotel there right down to the river mouth. Others have walked all the way up to Mount Wellington, and that's how long this river is, right to the top of Mount Wellington where it starts. But there are lots of waterfalls and steep cliffs to climb, so that was a bit beyond my endurance. There have been landslips, and the river's been rearranged a number of times by the river. It goes through pastoral land and beautiful bush. It's full of the most amazing wildlife. So I think this is going to be a treasure for the community for decades to come, and I think it's a wonderful outcome. And the amount of detail and work and opposition that's been overcome to get this far has been amazing. So congratulations to everyone involved.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I am very much in support of this proposal, but I do have some serious concerns about the parking, and I'd like to ask some questions as to determine whether or not some provision for parking should be made in this application rather than being deferred. So I note that Council has acknowledged that there isn't really clearly provided parking solutions here, and that we could look at it at a later stage. I've got two problems with that. The first is planning, forethought, and the second is, based on that, budgeting. So my concerns are also the lack of formal parking at the trail entry points means that users may resort to parking in the residential streets at one end, or using up the Bowls Club parking without permission at the other end. They may be in favour of that because it could attract clientele, we don't know. Then they've got to cross at the Bowls end, they've got to cross the main road. Now, I realise it's a state road and we can't just put calming provisions down without DSG support, but I've got some concerns about people wanting to access the trail from that end, parking at the Bowls, crossing a busy, dangerous road, and someone being hurt or worse still, killed. So could I have some advice as to the wisdom of deferring parking at a later stage, given my concerns that I voiced here?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, currently we're sitting as the planning authority to consider the planning application. The planning scheme has a zero requirement for car parking for passive recreation. For those who want to go, it's 2.5.1. So we can't. That's not to say that the project manager can't put car parking in, or council can't make a decision to put car parking in, and the comments you make are valid. But before us, while we sit here as a planning authority, there's no requirement, and we can't overreach on the requirements of the planning scheme, so it can't be requested as part of the planning application.
Councillor Antoli.
So when we see applications, we can ask for amendments, or we can seek amendments to be made and to be put in and voted on. Given that council is the actual developer here, is there a chance that council would then contest an amendment on parking to TASCAP?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, it's not for me to make a call whether the applicant, who is not myself, would contest it to TASCAT or not. It would be up to the Chamber to decide whether they want to do that. If this was an application and we're dealing with it fairly, as we do with all our applicants, without any bias, then I would say that this does not require parking and parking can't be required as a planning permit condition. If the councillors choose to make that, then that's the councillor's decision. It's my recommendation as the planning authority and experienced planner that that would be overreach in this particular instance.
Mr. Smee, did you want to add something?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. We have considered parking as part of this project. We have had discussions with the Bowls Club. We've identified an area that they are in agreement with in terms of where users of the track could park, and that area requires minimal cost. It's been factored into our budget. In relation to crossing the Channel Highway, the proposal was to go under rather than over the highway. So the only times you wouldn't be able to go under would be in times of flood. So it's not proposed to send people over the road. It's proposed to send them under the bridge.
Thank you. That's very helpful. I didn't actually read that. Was that actually in this proposal? Was there any... Okay, I admit then that I missed it, which is good. That's why we ask questions and we get clarity. That's fantastic. Based on those helpful responses, I very much appreciate it and I'll be supporting it.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Further contributions or questions? No, everyone's very quiet tonight. If that's the case, then I'll put the motion as printed there on the screen. Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Would you like to sum up?
Because you said that, I'll just have a quick summary. Thanks everybody for their contributions, and Councillor Fox, it's always wonderful to know the history that, you know, we can sometimes be lost around the table of this significant piece, and your involvement and advocacy, no doubt, for all these years as well. So thank you very much. And the car parking, yes, good to raise that one. I understand staff, because since I guess I've been on council, that has been a negotiation discussion for a long time with the Bowls Club. So yes, who knows, they might get some more revenue. That could be a good outcome for there as well. So yes, thank you. Looking forward to using this trail. No doubt many other community members will as well.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. So it was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova. The recommendation is printed on page 82. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, the motion is carried unanimously. That brings us to the end of the Planning Authority, and the open session recommences at 6 p.m. We're now on page 110, petitions still being actioned. There were no petitions being actioned. Petitions received in the last period, fire and biodiversity town hall meeting. There is a recommendation on page 110, and I'm looking, please, for a mover and a seconder. Moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
We don't normally speak to a petition, but I move that the petition containing 351 signatures be received and referred to the appropriate department for consideration. Thank you.
Okay. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. Officers' reports to Council. We are considering Parks, Recreation and Natural Areas Bylaw number 3 of 2021 dash application for a permit. There is a recommendation on page 113 and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Dean, seconded Councillor Bain. Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Before I give my statement, just a shout out to fellow councillors for moving this in our previous meeting out of closed into this meeting to be open. That was a good decision, and thank you to the officers as well, the staff that's made that happen, because what it has meant is it's given an opportunity for community members to be aware and contribute to, I suppose, this debate here tonight. So that's been a productive decision. What is before us is essentially an application to approve a mobile sauna down at Toronto Beach in the car park, to operate out of the car park. I'm just going to highlight some of the key discussion points before I've got just a few questions. It's going to be for a transportable sauna trailer. This is a business that operates in the Huon Valley, already has done so for a number of years. When this is going to be in operation, it is always going to be staffed, as it does use a wood fire to heat it. It will be for a maximum of 3 days. One of those days is definitely going to be a Friday, and speaking to the applicant, it is very much clear that Friday is the one day, and there might be potential for weekends, but in the early trial period, it is going to be just Fridays. That this will only operate between 9 and 4, although they'll be allowed to set up from 6:30. At the end of the day, they must remove the trailer from the car park. And the last point I'll just make there is that the applicant has agreed to a conditional permit, so that permit will last for just 12 months. So it's quite an interesting proposal. I'm not a sauna goer, but I think the feedback that I've received already from this has overwhelmingly been in support and excitement for the idea. At the same time, there's been a couple of questions, so I will put those on the record and just see if I can get a response, and if not, then I'm sure other councillors will have some questions as well. The car park in question is obviously quite a large one. There are a number of users, particularly in summer, but I note that this is not going to operate in summer. It will in the other 3 months. So I guess the first question I just have is around the smoke impact from the wood fire, given that there is a playground and also an exercise area within about 20 or 30 metres of probably where the car park is going to be. So I could just ask what potential impact that might have on park users.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, we will put a condition on the permit that states that the operator cannot cause a nuisance via means of smoke, and that will be regulated by the smoke regulations of 2019. We will also endeavour to locate the facility as far away as possible, as practical, from the playground and exercise area. And I guess the other thing I'd note is that this is a standard wood heater. It's not designed to generate smoke, it's designed to generate steam. And the advice we've received is that the actual smoke that this produces is very minimal. It's it's no more than what you would expect from a wood heater in a residence.
Councillor Dean.
Yeah, look, the follow-up there is, I understand it, obviously it's a sauna, so it operates at very high temperature, so the wood heater burns very, very hot. And my understanding is that apart from the early on in the morning, there will be virtually no smoke, and that's the experience I've heard from others when it's in operation elsewhere. So, but it's still comforting here that there will be an additional condition there. Just in terms of the location of the trailer, I understand there's not many cars at 6:30 in the morning down at Torona Beach. There will be a few users, but they would like, I'm sure, to be as close to the water's edge as possible. Are staff suggesting then that there might be an additional permit as to where they can and cannot be located? And I just preface that by saying that I'd be a bit hesitant to make them be in a certain part of the car park and they turn up and caravans or something are using it and then they have to leave because they're not technically in the right area. So is there going to be some flexibility, as in like a preferred area or not, so that they don't lose, I suppose, the business given the conditions of the car park of the day they turn up?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, that would be the intention, that there would be a preferred site that is designated. However, common sense would prevail in relation to providing some flexibility in the event that space is occupied when the operator turns up.
Councillor Dean.
And then just a couple of questions, I suppose, on behalf of the community, which councillors received today from the Torona Community Association. One of them was around potentially adding a condition around making sure that they leave the site tidy. I think condition 6 pretty much alludes this already. It says, at all times whilst operating the car park, the sauna is to be staffed and the area around the sauna kept clean and tidy. I mean, I'd like to think that the owner is going to make sure that they leave no impact, but that was a question from the community, so I just thought whether we could maybe expand that clause to include having or left or whatever, something along those lines.
Mr. Smee.
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor. I think the intent is if it's left clean and tidy throughout its operation, that when they leave it's going to be clean and tidy. But it's a standard clause in any of our permits that users are required to leave the area clean and tidy, so no problem including that.
Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Being Mr. Reeves' final night, I did tie in a question here for him around traffic. A couple of questions did come to me around the potential impact of traffic. Well, I don't think this is really going to create a big nuisance on Taruna Beach myself personally, but I do know that the intersection at the top, or as you descend Taruna Crescent, you kind of come to a bit of a wide junction, then you descend down towards the beach. And residents have for a long time wondered why there's no line marking on that intersection and whether I could put on notice to Mr. Reeve whether we could look into or get a response as to why there is no line marking. For locals understand and know how to navigate that intersection, but I have seen many a tourist and visited the area not really understand which way is give of way, right or left down to the beach. So can I have a response now, or maybe I can put that one on for a response after you've left?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. I'm hesitant to take it on notice, but I will need to, because I'll need to pass it on to one of my staff, but I'm happy to do that before I do depart there and they can have a look at that. I know they've looked at a number of intersections, particularly in the Taruna area, which is obviously one of the old areas in the municipality there and has got some fairly unusual arrangements. So happy to take that one on board.
Brilliant. Councillor Dean.
Great, and just the last thing, I guess the key probably point here to make is that this is a permit for a trial for 12 months. Having spoken to the owner of this business, they are 100% on board with bringing the community on board and do not whatsoever want to intrude and run amok. But if things go awry, that there is the opportunity for members of the community to feedback to council on any issues that they encounter, and that this will come back before us at a later council meeting. Whether they want to continue, we'll still have to approve any further extension. So I just wanted to make that point and finish on saying that I'm very supportive of this application. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor, and thanks, Councillor Dean, for doing a great summary and raising concerns from the community. I didn't declare this as a conflict, but I have actually tried this sauna at a festival. And I guess in regards to the comments about smoke, I don't remember that being a problem. It was at a four-day festival or something like that, people camping and things close by. I just wanted to have a personal experience of that one. As we know, these are, rising across Tasmania, the classic one in Derby. I think the City of Hobart's done one at Long Beach, had an EOI for that. And you go wherever you are, in different places in Tasmania, there's sauna businesses popping up and that rise of cold water swimming and that linkage. So I was waiting for something to happen in Kingborough, and I think probably the next spot might be Kingston Beach. So perhaps, I don't know, I haven't got one there to put. But, I just think, I wouldn't be surprised in the future. People would love to see one there as well. I just had a question regarding, people who are working. Why did we look at the 9 till 4 and not sort of a pre-swim sauna dip before you come to work sort of hours?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, they were the hours suggested by the applicant.
Okay, yep, that's I was wondering that. And as this is a new experience and noting the bylaw and the different fees, how do we sort of base this fee? And if we are looking at this for the future, will that be a we'll sort of know where to roll with now?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the proposed fee structure would be similar. If council recall, there was an approval for a sauna operation on Bruny Island in which there was a fee charged per use. So we would look to implement a similar model for the fee structure for this operation.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I forgot the one on Bruni, so thanks for that.
Further, Councillor Antoli, I have next.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Well, I don't like saunas and I don't like swimming in cold water, but apart from my personal biases, I think it's the evidence of combining the two together. The evidence is pretty strong that it's pretty good for you, so I'm very happy to support this. And another reason why I think this is a great use of public land, because it's close to a swimming area, a safe swimming area, and it's a service to the community. And for those that want to, if I went into did that backwards and forwards, I'd probably have a heart attack, but I just think it's a great little initiative, a clever one. I like the creativity. I want to a shout out to the business owner for bringing something smart and clever to our community. These sort of Nordic fun things are very common in Northern Europe. They add a lot of vodka to it, which I know we won't be doing that here, but just happy to support it. Some great questions around the smoke issue and, well, I think very well answered, and very much happy to support this and hope that it goes forward without delay.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Further comments or questions? Councillor Dean, did you want to sum up? No? In that case, I'll put the motion as printed there on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. We're now on page 114, the WasteWise events policy. There is a recommendation on page 116. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved, Councillor Midgley. Seconder, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm not moving this one with, like, a whole lot of glee. Because I guess it's a bit of a change in regards to our WasteWise events policy and our WasteWise events guidelines. So we have here is the WasteWise events policy and the WasteWise events guidelines up for review. So in summary, the WasteWise events policy can be adhered to at our council run events, but for non-council related events, it is not. At the non-council run events, we're finding that waste is commingled and contaminated. And so the WasteWise events policy very much steps out how we would love to see, the aspiration of how we'd love to see that event organisers, like the many events, for example, that we've seen at the Hub or different areas. We have this, you know, aspirational policy of how we would love our waste to be put, so the recycling, the FOGO products in the FOGO bin, and the landfill stuff in the landfill bin. But I don't know if any other councillors do this, but when I go to events, I look in the bins, and I can see that they are not being adhered to. Big shout out to staff at our council run events, they are. So I guess it's a matter of really looking at this and going, well, you know, let's have a look at this. And see that it's unfortunately not working. We will have the guidelines, and the guidelines will be given to all of the hirers of our different venues. But if we're having a policy that's not being adhered to, then we need to, I guess, relook at that. And that is what we are doing tonight. So I could go on about waste and behaviour and what we do, but like it's a really big thing. The Wooden Boat Festival had the scouts, I heard, actually standing by the bins to show people where to put their rubbish, because even now, with all the communication and things like that, we still don't know where to put our stuff. And we know that if we're putting non-FOGO-related items in a FOGO bin, then it's completely contaminated. And Mr. Reeve, I don't know what happens then, but what happens to a FOGO bin if it's contaminated through your mayor, acting mayor?
Mr. Reeve.
Yes, through your acting mayor, I guess it would depend a little bit. So generally the FOGO bin will get collected and amalgamated into a larger group of FOGO bins, if you like, in the back of the truck, in the back of the hopper of the truck. So having one FOGO bin contaminated probably doesn't mean too much, but for the ones, the events, which are probably could be treated separately because they could be taken away separately, that might be an issue more for those ones, which would end up in landfill. I might just add as well, though, that compared to other councils for FOGO, we have some fairly low contamination rates for FOGO, so which is a good thing. So, yes, that would be my answer to that one.
Thank you, and apologies, I didn't do that in the formal way, sorry. So, yes, it is great that we can have the WasteWise Events Guide. I really thank staff for their commitment and due diligence when we have our council run events. It is really great to see. We might sit around this table and go, oh, what does this little bit mean? Like, I think it, you know, it does mean a lot. I'd personally love to see that we didn't have any takeaway coffee cups in Kingborough, that we, you know, we had, if we want to be truly aspirational, I'd love to put that on the table, that we had food vans and you had to bring your own cups and cutlery and plates. You know, I think in the future we are going to see that. See this, because waste is about stopping it at the source, and even though this policy is a really great thing, as humans we need to really look at our behaviour change and make that behaviour change ourselves and be the lead in this space. So perhaps maybe, I don't know if it's okay to just offer a suggestion of my thoughts, but you know, if we're letting go of this WasteWise policy, that maybe with our event guidelines we maybe have a review of that about how we can I guess, look at people who are doing events and things to maybe promote to the community. You know, pre-COVID, people were getting more into bringing their own plates and cutlery and things like that. And then COVID happened. We were allowed to bring our own things because of contamination. But maybe it's about doing some promotion around bringing that back into the forefront. Just because it's a food van, you know, doesn't mean that you can bring your own plate, or different ideas that we could do that. I also kind of thought, I wondered if we could have like an incentive for someone, say, does a really great, you know, adheres to the guidelines, maybe there's a reduction of fees, but I understand putting something into practice like that would be a really massive kind of a thing. So, yeah, maybe it's a re-look at that guideline, think about how we make that behaviour change, and also noting that waste and behaviour change is kind of an ongoing thing and an ongoing kind of channel that we need to keep kind of promoting to the community. So hopefully I'll see my councillors at the next event with their own little plate and cup and cutlery and plate, and we can all kind of like lead the way. But I guess in summary, that's what we're doing out. We're keeping the waste guide and we're just stopping the policy.
Thanks, Councillor Midgley. Further contributions, Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I was really happy to support this and second it, only because it's one of the few policies I've actually seen council amend to meet customer expectation, and the actual policy says that it talks about how we can't police it. But I've been to three community hall events, and everyone there has been very careful about the waste. I recall one in particular on Bruny Island, at Alona, where I was happy to volunteer to take the recyclable waste in the back of my car across the ferry and dump it at Beretta on the way home, as did several others. So I actually haven't found this non-compliance issue. I do know that having organised a birthday party event once down at Blackmans Bay, the waste policy criteria that we had to go through was just unbelievably onerous, and there was groaning all the way through. It was hard work. So I really... we just got to have faith in the local community that they're pretty aware of all this. We recycle at home. We have a FOGO bin. Most of the people in our street do. And what is the point of having all of these conditions on a policy that you can't even enforce, that adds all this regulation, and it actually turns off people even hiring our facilities? So I'm all for it. It makes sense. And we just got to have faith that the average Kingborough resident, who I think is maybe not green politically, but very green in terms of environmentally aware and friendly, as am I, that it'll be fine. We'll work it out. And one or two commingled bins that we see out the hub will not bring down the downfall of the Western world. And if we do, and just a word of warning, if we do ask for too many paper straws, we'll get our Donald Trump rise up in this country. So be careful what you ask for.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Further contributions? Councillor Dean.
I read this and I... thanks for the comments before, but look, I just read it and it's difficult to enforce when it's not our... event, understand, makes perfect sense. But we're still going to have the guidelines and share them to hirers and have them on our website. I must have missed it because I was too tired when I read it. But what is the difference then by retiring the policy versus the what is essentially voluntary requirements, I suppose, anyway? So what is the benefit in retiring it?
Ms. Chikuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor, that's a really good question. So the guidelines are guidelines. So the difference is the policy is the outward-facing commitment that at not only council events but non-council public events that it will be adhered to. So we are still, I suppose what I'd like to reiterate is as an organisation and a council, we are still very committed to using our best endeavours to make sure all events are waste wise, and we do a lot to ensure that. We do a lot of promotional and education and awareness campaigns. We will have the guidelines provided to, or they already are provided to hirers, and will continue to be so. As well as there was a suggestion in the report in terms of following up with hirers that weren't particularly waste-wise at an event to sort of provide that feedback, and that in future we would like to see improvement at events. It's more that we just cannot enforce and commit to, you know, the I suppose the quite prescriptive requirements at non-council events.
Councillor Dean.
Yeah, look, and the community development officers and staff involved obviously have experienced this and know exactly what they're talking about. I'm not questioning that at all. I was just wondering why, or I guess what the benefit would be. But and I guess a question, follow-up question therefore is there a risk that we're dropping the bar somewhat if by not having this policy there, even though it's not enforceable and we can't make it a requirement, there's still guidelines. I just don't see like a huge amount of change. Happy to follow the recommendation, but just don't see what the difference will be having it there or not having it there. Are we just kind of making a statement to the community that, you know, are we lowering our standards potentially by just retiring the policy, even though we kind of all agree it's not working as per fit, but we still like it aspirationally to, if possible, if you have the manpower or person power come an event, that if you can have someone to stand next to the bins and kind of educate them, great. So do you see a difference, or is there a potential that there will be a difference here, or will still, because the guidelines are available, hopefully, if they're possible, they can still do it?
Ms. Chikuti.
Through Acting Mayor, there is a possibility of retaining the policy if it was amended to, if possible, please be waste wise at your event, and here's how you can, and resources, etc. I think it probably ends up being the same thing as having the guidelines, in that it's not committing to, I suppose, a commitment for all events. So it's sort of an administrative benefit, I suppose. So we'll achieve the same outcome that is already happening at this time. Hopefully we might even improve by implementing some things like follow-up after events, taking on board Councillor Midgley's suggestions about review of the guidelines, but it will just, I suppose, resolve ambiguity with the policy that's out there at the moment.
Councillor Dean.
That all makes sense. Look, I guess the point that Councillor Antoli made around, I guess, the steps or hoops you've got to jump through for a birthday party or some kind of event, I mean, is that, so there is going to be change? So if you are hosting a big birthday party, there will now be less requirements, and I don't really understand then. Is it going to be easier to have events now, or is it just the same? Is there literally just nothing changing apart from there's going to be a policy taken off our website? Is that the only change? Okay, I support it.
Okay, thanks, Councillor Dean. Councillor Midgley,
question.
To the question.
Yes. Just checking, and good thoughts, Councillor Dean, because as I said, I, you know, found it hard to move this one, but I don't want to talk about the waste. The balloons. Yes, does that mean that we still have our prohibition of balloons if we let go of this policy.
Ms. Chikuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the guidelines do say that they're not to be used. I suppose we can't guarantee that because we won't be inspecting bins at a private hirer's event or post. So.
Further question?
So I think that was a bit of a controversial one when this first came out by recall. I think Councillor Street even had a cartoon in the paper about it, maybe. I can't remember the balloon one. Was it this one? So that then, does that mean if we let go of this policy, people can then give away balloons at events?
Ms. Chikuti.
Through Acting Mayor, that's a good question. The guidelines say they are not to. And they sign, they're part of, provided alongside the terms and conditions. So it's still going to be a requirement. It just won't be, this is acknowledging that council is limited in its ability to monitor and enforce that requirement. We could look at the guidelines to make that very clear. I'm not sure how, without unless we have a staff member attend or inspect afterwards, how we would determine compliance or not.
Mr. Stewart, would you like to add something?
Yeah, thank you, through you, Acting Mayor. So what we're talking about here is removing the policy element, which, as we've talked about, we don't have the means to monitor or enforce effectively. That doesn't stop the fact that we have guidelines, which are still conditions of the hiring agreement that would be in place for the event operator to adhere to. So we would still be requiring them not to use those single-use plastics and things like balloons as part of that usage agreement. What we're doing here is acknowledging that from a policy perspective, we don't have the ability to enforce something. So having a policy on our books that means that we have to attempt to do something that we know we can't means that we should be withdrawing that, which is why this paper has come to you today. But the intent is not to change any of the practice in terms of how we would require our users to operate in our environments.
Councillor Midgley, further questions?
Thank you. So just checking, do we have the wording? What is the wording for in regards to single-use plastics and balloons specifically in the guidelines? Because if it's not specific, then I won't be able to support this, even though I moved it. But yeah, I can do that.
Mr. Stewart.
Through you, Acting Mayor. So in the guidelines, it says the use of bin monitors or a waste sorting station is recommended to assist in educating event attendees on how to use bin space in place and ensure minimal contamination. It says then there's a table which shows the avoid and alternatives. And for balloons, it says reusable bunting or pinwheels, tissue paper, pom-poms, painted rocks or bubbles.
Thank you. So it doesn't specifically say no balloons?
It doesn't specifically in the guidelines. The guidelines don't have that. Sorry, let me just double check that. No, sorry, in another section of the guidelines it says there will be no plastic bags, balloons, straws, polystyrene cups, etc. So that's on page one of the guidelines.
Okay. All right, and thank you. And one further question through you, Mayor. So, again, just in this summary, to ensure that I'm not being complacent in moving this from an environmental point of view, the policy isn't working. It's hard for staff to monitor. So, therefore, we're letting that go for our non-council-related events, but the guidelines are very clear in regards to what our users can and can't do. but noting that they could be using balloons at the moment and staff wouldn't. Is that kind of how it looks? Is that my summary?
Ms. Shikuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor, yes, that would be the case. So, as the CEO described, the current practices will not be changed. It is simply the retirement of the policy, and we are actually hoping that it might be improved with some extra initiatives that we'll put in place around education and awareness for hirers.
Thank you. And one further question for you, Acting Mayor. Did we have a look at other councils to kind of see perhaps that they're using guidelines and not having a policy?
Ms. Shikuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor, no, we didn't.
Further questions or contributions from anybody? Councillor Midgley, did you want to sum up? Oh, Councillor Fox.
I guess I'm interested in. I found this particular document quite difficult to understand what was going on. It might have been helpful to have the actual policy and the guidelines in our agenda, but I don't know how long they are. That's probably would have helped in the discussion. Thank you.
Any further comments or questions? Councillor Midgley, did you want to sum up? In that case, I'll put the motion as printed on the screen. Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Antoli. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. We're now on page 117, the financial report for January 2025. There is a recommendation on a page 119. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Bain, seconded Councillor Fox. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So the financial report is for January 2025, and the year-to-date underlying result is $1.48 million favourable to budget, which is quite a big shift from $952,000 in December. One of the big movements we've seen is the employee costs, which have actually come down $167,000 this month, which is something the staff had predicted, that a lot of substantial leave taken over the Christmas break, which is good to see. The full year budget hasn't really changed from last month, so we're still seeing the initial forecast was 2.935 loss, and that's gone down to 1.985 million. So a drop of 950,000, and 600,000 of that is going to be recurrent for future years. Just a couple of finance related questions I've got. The first one's just around the state government election commitments. I think we had around $700,000 in different projects committed in the state government election. The question is, are we likely to see that $700,000 this financial year?
Mr. Spinks. Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, yes, I would expect so. We've received grant deeds for all of those projects, and the return of the grant deed has been accompanied by an invoice for the respective amounts. So assuming the state government pay on invoice, then yes, it would be this financial year.
Councillor Bain.
Thanks. And second question is regarding the table and graph on page 122. It shows our cash and investments pushing $14 million as of 31 January this year, and that's in comparison to about $6.5 million at the same time last year. So I guess my question is this a sign of council being in a much stronger position as opposed to this time last financial year, or are there other factors involved?
Mr. Spinks.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I think there's probably a few things at play here. It's not really possible to sort of pin it down to one particular reason, but we did pay off a number of loans around June 2023, which substantially sort of ran down our cash reserves. So the fact that our balance is looking a little bit healthier now than they were then, I think is probably just an element of just general recovery happening. We've also received some grants in advance, the financial assistance grants, which we do every year, I have to add, but those grants do sort of go up every year. And of course we have the timing around our capital works program, which affects our cash balances as well. But I think the primary reason
as you've alluded to, is probably just an element of recovery, which is good.
Councillor Bain.
No, that's it. Thank you.
Further comments? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Regarding the financial report, and it's always good to see Councillor Bain deliver it. Life is never dull here. Item 5.2 under finance, there's a sentence there at the end that says, of this $950,000 improvement, $600,000 relates to recurrent savings and will impact future years' budgets. For the uninitiated, could someone explain what that means?
Mr. Spinks.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So a number of the forecast adjustments that have been made this year we think will carry forward into next year. So they include the additional rates revenue of $100,000, the additional user fees at Kingston Sports Centre, which is primarily memberships. So I think it's probably reasonable to expect that those memberships will continue into next year. And the major one is our decrease in our forecast for depreciation expense of $450,000. So between those three, tallies to $600,000, which I think will carry forward into future budgets.
Fantastic. So that's actually good news. Yeah, that, I know that, but it's good to tease that out so that everyone understands that. And we like to hear good news. So it makes life easier for yourself and the CEO. And when you're happy, we're happy, so that's good. I just want to continue to thank the team for the financial stewardship. It's going to be an important budget round this year, noting the big decisions we made last year. And it'll be very important in our workshops and in our public discussions that the figures we get are very accurate and sensitive to these positive changes.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. Just drilling in a bit more to the employee costs. So we've explained $167,000 of the change in variance. There's another $100,000 from last budget to this budget, from $328 to $65. Is that something that we can comment on what that variance was, or is that just a timing thing as well?
Mr. Spinks.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Employee costs is obviously a function of many things, but we do have vacant positions at the moment and a range of other things, you know, sick leave, which is very, very difficult to budget for, as is all leave. But the overwhelming reason for the decrease in that what was an unfavourable variance and still is, but it's much smaller, is that, as we were predicting, staff took quite a bit of leave over the December period. Thank you. And we're expecting, and we're hoping at least, that variance might decrease a little bit further as well.
Okay, thank you. And just digging in also to the underlying surplus, so our current year-to-date variance is 1.48, some 530,000 more than the current forecast variance. So are we expecting at some point, I imagine in the not-too-distant future, to adjust that forecast variance, or are we expecting that that additional 530 will dissolve over the remaining part of the financial year?
Mr. Spinks.
Acting Mayor, a number of the variances at the moment are timing-related, so we do expect them to reverse themselves. But some others, such as interest revenue, we have a watching brief on at the moment, so that's tracking about $65K favourable at the moment, so I expect we'll probably be making an adjustment for that one in the not too distant future. But you know, the difference between the 1.4 and the 950 is primarily variances which we expect to reverse themselves.
Further comments or questions? Councillor Bain, did you want to sum up? So I'll put the motion as printed there on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Bain, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. We're now on page 141, the appendices. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Happy to take the appendices as read.
Are there any questions or comments? No.
Oh, sorry, I have one.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. A question regarding the 30th of January met with Inspector Riley re-graffiti mitigation.
Miss Mr. Stewart.
Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor, I realise that's a question for me. Mm-hmm. We've obviously been, working on graffiti for a while. Obviously, within the means that we have within the organisation, the workforce capacity we have to be able to devote to new initiatives, and certainly the budget we have from an operational perspective. On the 30th of January, the Director of Environment, Development and Community and I met with Inspector Riley to talk about, how we continue to progress dealing with the scourge that is graffiti within the municipal area. We discussed a number of operational things that we could be doing to work together, including the identification of a key area within the municipal area that we will work together on to focus on. So we've been following up both with the state government following on from that as a valued partner in that. So certainly the area of the southern outlet as it heads into Kingston is an area that does have a significant amount of graffiti. So that's an area that we want to work on with the police. So this is part of a joint approach that we maintain between council and the police, and hopefully working with the state government as well to making sure that we're addressing graffiti and making sure that we're stamping it out in our communities within the means that we have within council.
Thank you. Further comments or questions? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just from the 17th of January, in company with Mayor, I met with Josh Garvin. Just with the federal election coming up, just curious to know, have we finalised the council's Kimber's election priorities in some sort of documentation that we're giving out to candidates?
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, so we have created a list, certainly, that we discussed with the candidate during that meeting. Certainly, there's potentially a little bit more work we could do to really make that election advocacy shine, but we do have a list and a pitch document that we're sharing with federal candidates.
Further comments or questions? If not, I will put the motion. It's printed there on the screen. Moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. Notices of motion. There were no notices of motion. Confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please, that in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council, by absolute majority, move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, application for leave of absence. Moved, Councillor Antoli, seconded Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye. Motion is carried. Thank you. So in accordance with Kingborough Council Meeting Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. So I'd like to thank... wish